Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Our topic for today is The Soul, Part 5, or The Soul and the Natural World. I like this thought from the writings of Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of Lucis Trust. Lucis Trust sponsors our show, Inner Sight. And the quote is as follows. The anima mundi is the soul of all things. It is that which results from the union of spirit and matter. It permeates all substance. It underlines all form. Whether it be the form that we call an atom, or the form of a human being, a planet, or a solar system. What does the term anima mundi, what does it really mean?
Well, if you go to the dictionary and look it up as I did, you find that it means soul or breath. And it's a word that can be traced back in its origin to the Latin word for spirit, as well as to the Greek word for wind. And that's interesting to speculate on, the idea that the anima mundi is the wind, because it brings to mind, is it from the Bible, the saying, ashes to ashes and dust to dust, which is chanted at the time of death? Ashes and dust implying that the original living body is, at the time of death, dispersed by the wind. Because this expresses a great spiritual law that governs all living forms. Whether it's an atom or an animal or a plant or a human being, every form follows the law of gravitation, we're told in the Ageless Wisdom, which I guess is another term for what's called entropy, if you've heard of that term, that the physical form world, the material world, inevitably decomposes and fragments itself and is scattered by the wind. So the anima mundi is the soul of the world, or the world's soul, that animates all forms for a time and then relinquishes them.
Yeah, I think this idea of the anima mundi is it's another way of looking at the soul in a much more expansive way, that it takes us out of the concept of the soul as being something strictly human, the human soul, the spiritual soul, because if we look down through all of nature, there is this same soul factor, the same soul quality. It's in the animal kingdom, it's in the vegetable or the plant kingdom, and it's even down at the level of the mineral kingdom. And all these lower kingdoms that lie below the human stage, we still have this factor of the soul, and it is this soul quality that animates and provides impetus and direction and striving for some type of perfection, even at these lower levels. And this is the anima mundi at work, the soul of all things all throughout nature.
Maybe we should review with our listeners some of the definitions of the soul that we've talked about on earlier programs. These ideas come from the Ageless Wisdom system that's contained in the books of Alice Bailey as well as many other writers. But one definition of the soul is that it's the linking aspect between spirit, or pure life, and matter, substance. It's the relation between spirit and matter. Another definition is that it's the link between God and his form, whatever he has created, which, like you say, includes living forms within all of the realms, mineral, vegetable, animal, as well as human. Still another definition that we talked about was that the soul is the attractive force. It's what holds forms together so that the life of God can manifest in the visible outer world. And finally, as you kind of implied a minute ago, the soul is known as the force of evolution itself. It's that which impels or compels forward movement and growth. And we're given some analogies. For example, a flower that turns to follow the sun is an expression of the soul in nature.
Yeah, it's that very deep spiritual essence within every form, from a mineral on up to a human being and beyond, that manifests certain qualities. It's that which gives form certain qualities. And, for example, well, as you mentioned in the vegetable kingdom, about the example of the flower, it is the soul quality, the essence within that plant, that determines what kind of a plant it will be.
Whether a rose or an elm.
A rose or an elm or a broccoli or whatever, or a cauliflower. It's that soul essence that is building, actually, it's the building aspect or the building energy within this plant that determines what it's going to be. And not only what it's going to be, but the quality of this plant. Now, quality comes out, for example, you see it in the perfection of the rose, and or the orchid. And you notice it in the colors and also in the perfume that radiates from this flower. That indicates its relative stage of perfection. And in the mineral kingdom, you have a similar striving for perfection in gemstones like diamonds and the radiance of the diamond and the precious stones and gold and silver, and those are all indications of more advanced stages within that kingdom. And the same in the animal kingdom too. We find these advanced stages that are pushed forward by the soul in terms of the animals, of domestic animals, like the dog or the cat or the horse in particular. These kinds of animals display a more intelligence, a more stage of perfection. And so in each case, it is the soul that is driving that forward.
Yeah, and you know, I think that what needs to be brought out too is what Alice, I just want to underscore that point, that in the quotation that I made before, that I took from the works of Alice Bailey, in speaking about the soul, she says, "The soul permeates all substances, it underlies all forms, whether it be the form that we call an atom or the form of a human being, a planet, or a solar system." And I, before reading Alice Bailey, I constantly thought of the soul as an individuality, and through reading her books, I've become aware now that it's something that really has a lot of commonality to it, that we're all part of the soul, that the soul is within us, but it's not an individual slice of the soul that we own. Could you expound upon that a little bit further and clarify that?
Well, it's one soul. The world is one unified expression of the soul, and I think some of the indigenous or aboriginal peoples who live more closely to the natural world understand this better than the people in the developed world, because they live within nature, you could say, and they have this sense that all of the natural world is living. And I think that's an expression of what Alice Bailey was trying to say, that the rocks, the trees, the plants, the animals are all living expressions of divine purpose. as that's the best I can do with that thought.
Yeah, it might also explain what some of the enlightened spiritual leaders set forth years ago when they began to talk about seeing themselves in other people. It might shed light on that type of consciousness. But where does the idea come from that man should have dominion over nature?
Doesn't it come from the Bible? I think Genesis. But I was reading something fairly recently that seemed to question whether dominion is really the word from the Bible. I don't know what language, if there is an original language in which Genesis was written. I don't know if there's been a study of the original terminology, but this passage that I came across seemed to imply that perhaps the more correct word that was used originally was something that implied stewardship. And there is a difference between dominion and stewardship, don't you think?
Oh, certainly. Dominion has the connotation of dominance,
right.
Taking over and taking command and exploiting nature. And certainly that's what we've done over these years. But I think we're coming around to the idea that, no, we can't exploit it anymore. We have to be stewards of the earth and stewards of the lower kingdoms. And
that implies responsibility to me, stewardship, that we have responsibility.
So maybe the truth of that statement is now just coming into our consciousness of what we should be. It's instinctive in us to really become stewards of the
You can say that the Aboriginal peoples had a more pure understanding of their proper relationship to the natural world. And as we often find ourselves thinking, we say the technology and the development of the intellect have caused the human being to separate himself from the natural world and to plunder it. But there's another angle to that I came across not too long ago, that the mind is needed, the developed mind of the human being is needed for humanity to fulfill its responsibilities to the natural world. And in fact, the Jewish Kabbalah, the mystical tradition within Judaism, touches on this, because I read that the Kabbalah teaches that as Adam named all of God's creatures, he helped to define their essence by naming them. By identifying them, he helped to define their essence, according to the Kabbalah, and that Adam swore to live in harmony with those that he had named. And thus, the Kabbalah says, at the very beginning of time, man accepted responsibility before God for all creation. So that's kind of an encouraging thought, that the mind of the human being is necessary to fulfill the stewardship.
Yeah, absolutely, because now we have the presence of mind and the ability to look at nature and to really analyze it and to see how we can improve upon it. And man is doing that the botanists are working with in the field of botany and trying to improve. They're improving the plants and the flowers and the vegetable kingdom, and they're making more perfect expressions of these plants. So, yes, I mean, it takes a mind to do that.
Well, it's certainly an interesting debate as to whether or not the word in the Bible should have been translated as dominion or stewardship. Certainly stewardship implies, as Dale said, it's got a connotation of being a custodian, being given a great responsibility towards the animals and the other kingdoms on earth. And so that really gives us an idea that we should have great respect for our responsibility. And for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and we're speaking today about the soul, and specifically the show is titled The Soul and the Natural World. In our book, by the way, if you'd like to order the book that relates to this particular show, Alice Bailey, who's the founder of Lucis Trust, who we base all of the all of the talks on this show, every discussion that we have, emanates from those books. But if you're interested in the particular book that more or less is comprehensive and relates to this topic. It's called Esoteric Psychology. You can certainly read more about this topic in that book by Alice Bailey. You can just order the book from our toll-free number. It's 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. An easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. And we have 24 volumes of book. They're very interesting reading. You'll really explore life with us and find out the inner depths of life and also all about what reality is, what's mankind's place in the world and relationship to the universe. And if you'd like to order our books, you can get a discount. If you order all 24 volumes directly from Lucis Trust, you can get a 10% discount. And to order, you can also order our books, other books that we have. And by the way, one thing I'd like to say, too, is that we were giving you a gift today. We're giving a gift to you. If you'd like The Science of Meditation, you can certainly call up on our toll-free number and order The Science of Meditation. Or you can order, our tape, Beginning to Meditate. We have a great respect for meditation, and we believe that it can bring people to greater understandings of themselves and an understanding of how to achieve an inner peace. So to order any of our materials, if you'd like a cassette tape of this show, or cassette tapes in general of any of our shows, or the free booklet called Science of Meditation, give us a call at 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. And remember also that the work of Lucis Trust, including this program, is funded entirely by voluntary donations, so we welcome your donations as a means of keeping us on the air. I also like this thought from Alice Bailey. The soul of all things, the anima mundi, is the life and soul of the one in whom all embodied existences live and move and have their being. Can we see examples of people who have had an understanding of the soul and nature?
Yes, I think so. There are some outstanding examples that have responded to this anima mundi within the natural world. One of the earliest was the great emperor Ashoka of India 2,000 years ago, who was, I think, the first person to teach a respect and a compassion for animals. And then, of course, there's St. Francis of Assisi and Albert Schweitzer, who I think everybody would be familiar with, and Luther Burbank, who did so much work with the vegetable kingdom, George Washington Carver.
Yes, and also I'd like to mention another one that was more prominent during the turn of the century, or the last century, John Muir. Mm-hmm. And he did tremendous work in persuading Theodore Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, establish the national park system and founding of Yellowstone National Park. John Muir had a great love of and a sensitivity to nature. And he understood the beauty, and he responded to the beauty, and particularly out in the Yellowstone area. And he was one of the real forerunners, I think, that in the environmental movement. And speaking of the environmental movement, it's the environmentalists today that are helping to preserve the quality of nature just by there's an understanding there that of the essence, of this divine essence and the beauty that must be preserved, I think.
But beyond that kind of recognition, don't you think that there's something that some of these great scientists unlock, a kind of a code that they break through that seems to unlock the secrets of the vegetable kingdom, for example, the work that Luther Burbank did, or Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, might have done. It's as if they break through the barrier between the vegetable and the human kingdoms and begin to work with the laws that govern that lower kingdom, or for example, the human beings that work with animals and know how to communicate with animals, the work that that's being done with primates to teach them to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very true. I mean,
Jane Goodall's work.
Jane Goodall is a perfect example of that. And then there's the lady out in California.
Francine Patterson, Coco.
Coco the gorilla. She's teaching the gorilla to communicate. Mm-hmm. And she lives with this gorilla. Mm-hmm. And also working with chimpanzees and on this electronic punch board that they use mm-hmm. to construct right. sentences. And so all of this is it's stimulating the animal mind. And that's essentially one of the responsibilities of the human kingdom. If this is our responsibility to help the animal move forward. And so particularly in these primates and in the dog and the cat and the horse, for example, and those are receiving a tremendous boost and stimulation to their little minds and bringing them much closer to the human kingdom. So it's very important work, and we're doing exactly what we should be, and that's part of being the stewards of the earth.
I thought that quote that I mentioned earlier by Alice Bailey was profound, and I'd like you to comment on it again. Once again, it's the soul of all things, the anima mundi, is the life and soul of the one in whom all embodied existences live and move and have their being. Can you just comment on that, maybe further elaborate on that one?
Well, to me, it is a very profound quote and kind of mysterious, but to me it seems to say that all levels of the manifested world, whether we're looking at human or animal or vegetable or mineral, are expressing the one life that created them, which is what we call God. That everything that is given form and is manifested on our planet is an expression of its creator.
Everything is an expression of God, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes, the vegetable world, the animal world, the mineral world are all expressions of divinity. And when you begin to look at the world in that way, you realize that everything has its purpose and its function, and everything is interwoven in its functioning. Ecology is teaching this very well now, that you can't disturb this balance without causing great harm. And in fact, the Hopi Indians have the term koyanaskatsi for the imbalance that has developed in the world due to our lack of understanding that God is present in all of the natural world as well as in the human world.
Yeah, it's part of the web of life that mm-hmm. they call it. And it's important for human beings to begin to look at nature in a whole different way, because we're so identified with form life. We look at our form and our form, our physical bodies. We look at animal forms, and we can look at vegetable forms, and we don't tend to see that beneath these forms or within the forms there is this soul factor that is driving these forms and to move forward towards some kind of perfection. I keep getting back to that, but that's essentially what's going on. And that's what we need to, begin to train ourselves to look deeply.
And every kingdom has a dependency and a sacrifice to render the other kingdoms. For example, the mineral kingdom, by what it deposits into the soil, then enriches the vegetable kingdom. And the vegetable kingdom enriches the animals who eat it. And then human beings supposedly take that a step further by eating the animals, although there's a growing interest in vegetarianism. But the point being that all of these different realms of the web of life sustain each other and need each other.
I was struck by one comment that I read in one of the Alice Bailey books recently about the vegetable kingdom and the purpose of that kingdom. And it says, "It is in this kingdom that one first sees clearly the glory which lies ahead of humanity." Now, here you have an example of the the glory that the vegetable kingdom produces is a lesson for humanity. It's something for an example of what is in store for us if we can only learn from it.
I guess what you're saying is we can certainly learn a lot about life from the vegetable kingdom as well.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't there also examples of man's relationship to nature that show a lack of soul awareness?
Well, I'm afraid so. I mean, the whole question of environmental degradation and the mad cow disease that's so much in the news now, to me, that's a perfect example of a lack of wisdom in man's relation to the lower kingdoms, because the mad cow disease, as I understand it, is based on the fact that people who were raising these animals for meat were feeding them products from their own kind. And as I just said a minute ago, these kingdoms all sustain each other. The vegetable kingdom sustains the animal. Animals are herbivores, and this mad cow disease has resulted from feeding diseased parts of their own kind, of cows and other animals, ground up into small matter, but still they're eating their own kind and making them into a kind of cannibal. And this mm-hmm. terrible disease is ravaging not only the animals, but the human beings now who eat those diseased animals. And there's genetic engineering and cloning and biological warfare. All of these are examples of wrong use of nature.
I absolutely agree. And it seems that going back to the beginning of our show, it seems like instead of being stewards, a lot of the times mankind has become very mercenary and greedy
right.
and disrespected the animal and the vegetable kingdom.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts on the soul and in nature that you want to mention?
Well, yes, but I wanted to mention, too, that there are... On a more positive note, there are signs of man's growing understanding of responsibility to nature. I mean, having mentioned genetic engineering and mad cow disease, we also have to mention the realization of animal rights that's increasingly getting attention, mm-hmm. and the societies for the preservation of cruelty to animals, the science of ecology that's developed, the United Nations Environmental Program that charts the development of the environment globally and gives a complete overview. It's really a kind of a mystery, I think, man's relation to nature. And it was so beautifully touched on by an ecologist named the Reverend Thomas Berry. He said, every being has its own interior, its self, its mystery, its numinous aspect. To deprive any being of this sacred quality is to disrupt the total order of the universe. Reverence, he said, will be total or it will be not at all.
That's good. He believes in the dignity of all beings.
Mm-hmm.
In closing, we invite you to ponder on this thought. Goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. Goodwill is love in action. It is the energy that draws us together in right relationship. There's a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.